Why don't people usually change their minds? We talked about this a few weeks ago. One of our guests said this.
You have a way to rationalize it, and that goes along with a concept called cognitive dissonance. We really, our brains don't like having conflict within them. You know, if there's information that comes in and it is upsetting you, you will suffer some anxiety.
That's Audrey Haynes. She's a political science professor at the University of Georgia. You may hear more and more about cognitive dissonance as we get closer to the election. It's a term used to explain politics all the time, but it's something that not a lot of people really understand. And so it's time for Celeste Headlee to break it down.
Ooh, break it down, baby, because I want y'all all to know. Let me break it down for you again.
I'll start with a couple of examples. Say you think of yourself as a charitable person. You get a big tax refund one year, and instead of donating any of that money, you buy yourself a big screen TV.
Three words for you. Treat yourself.
Or how about this? You think of yourself as an animal lover, but one day as you're walking along, a stray cat gets in your way, and you kick it. One more. What if you love the music of Richard Wagner, but believe that such music could only come from a great soul? And yet you also know Wagner was probably anti-Semitic.
Hey, man, that's not cool.
Holding two thoughts in your mind that are fundamentally at odds causes cognitive dissonance. It's an uncomfortable sensation for most people, so we find ways to resolve it. The man who coined the phrase cognitive dissonance was psychologist Leon Festinger. Festinger wrote a book in 1956 called When Prophecy Fails. In it, he described a cult of people who fervently believed that a UFO landing was about to happen and that Earth would be destroyed. So they all met at the specified time and place and waited and waited. But no UFO appeared. The Earth remained intact. Nothing happened. Festinger says the cult members suffered painfully from cognitive dissonance. Had all their work been in vain? Were all of their beliefs unfounded? Cognitive dissonance in a human brain must be relieved one way or another. It is stressful to experience. In the case of that cult, they decided aliens were giving Earth another chance, and they became even more invested in their faith than before.
'Cause I gotta have faith. Ooh, I gotta have faith.
Festinger also talked about a Jewish sect that believed its rabbi was the Messiah, but the rabbi died of a stroke. Cognitive dissonance. They arrived at a very similar solution to the UFO cult. The Jewish sect members decided the rabbi was still the Messiah and his death was part of the plan. He'd be resurrected soon.
I'll be back.
Cognitive dissonance is fairly common. We love a particular filmmaker, even if he or she has committed a heinous crime. We support a politician, even if they've done things that we disapprove of highly. Most psychologists accept the theory of cognitive dissonance. There is even some evidence from brain research that different parts of the brain are activated when cognitive dissonance is strong. The intensity of pain caused by cognitive dissonance can vary widely. It's usually more uncomfortable the more you care about the issue. And it's also affected by how different one truth is from another. Let me explain. If you think a particular shirt is well made, but it ends up ripping easily, that's cognitive dissonance. But it may not be all that painful because you don't really care. You might just give up on the original opinion that the shirt was well made and think, eh, guess I was wrong. You solve the problem by changing your opinion. But what if it's the year 1510 and you've built your life around your Catholic faith? You firmly believe the Pope is infallible. Then you find out Pope Julius has a whole slew of mistresses and an illegitimate daughter.
That's just my baby.
Cognitive dissonance. You might find it difficult to just change your opinion about the Pope and your faith.
Pope! Pope! It's a time to get up and put on your hat.
It's a stupid hat.
There are three other ways to solve this problem, according to psychologists. One, justify the behavior. In this case, well, the Pope is a human man. After all, it's only natural he would make an occasional mistake. Two, justify the behavior with new information. So, yes, the Pope makes some mistakes, but he's given more to charity and done more penance than any other Pope, so he makes up for it. And finally, there's denial. You just say it's all a conspiracy and the Pope never did that stuff.
La 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 la, can't hear you. La 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 la, can't hear you. La 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 la, can't hear you.
cognitive dissonance solved. I'd imagine you've seen examples of those methods in posts on Facebook, but you won't find many examples of people changing their opinions because people have a really hard time doing that.
I don't like change!
Here's one more example of cognitive dissonance, the fable of the fox and the grapes. The fox thinks the grapes look delicious. He tries desperately to get them, but he can't. So he walks away and says, they were probably sour anyway. So those are the basics of cognitive dissonance. Let's turn to the experts to fill in the details.
Nicely done, Celeste. And we are, in fact, joined now by Audrey Haynes. She's an associate professor of political science and the Josiah Meggs Distinguished Teaching Professor at the University of Georgia School of Public and International Affairs. Nice to have you back, Audrey.
Nice to be here.
Also with us is Roxanne Donovan. She's a professor of psychology and interdisciplinary studies at Kennesaw State University. Roxanne is also the assistant chair of KSU's Interdisciplinary Studies Department. Good morning, Roxanne.
Morning, Adam.
Okay, so our first big question here is, what do we think of Celeste's explanation of cognitive dissonance? Did she get it right, Audrey?
I think so. I think she did a very good and very creative job of explaining what it was in very simple terms.
Roxanne, would you seek to amend our working definition of cognitive dissonance?
No, Celeste hit it out of the park.
Okay, well, that was easy. Audrey, back in August, you spoke with Celeste about why people have such a hard time changing their minds. She also talked then with Jason Reifler. He's a political science professor who's done a lot of research into why facts don't seem to sway people's opinions. Here's a bit of what he had to say.
People who hold a misperception, so something they believe about the world that is factually incorrect, when you give them information to try and correct that misperception, then among the people who hold the misperception most strongly, that giving them information that shows them that they're wrong has the potential to backfire and actually get them to believe a misperception even more strongly.
So, Audrey, why is that the case? Why don't facts convince people that they're wrong?
Well, you know, yeah, I think you have to backtrack a little, and Roxanne, you can add on or correct me at any point in time because I defer to your psychological expertise. But usually when we talk about politics in particular, we have gone through a long period of political socialization generally, even young people before they vote. And they've taken in a lot of information. They usually have developed a tribe. You know, there's a theory called cultural cognition that talks about, how this reinforces what we believe, what our perceptions of things are. And in that whole process, when we take in new information or things that may seem like inconvenient facts, as Weber said, our subconscious is processing it. You know, it's going through a sieve of our feelings, our instincts, our life circumstances, our tribal reinforcement. So when someone counters us with something that seems to disagree with everything we believe, we tend to dig in. We're skeptics. You know, I give one example in class where I said, we often take in information from the newspaper, and news organizations are really good about, here's one side of the story, here's the other side of the story. Easy. We see both of them. Oh, that confirms what we think. But if we saw a news story that said, absolutely, this is how it is, and it conflicts with what we believe, we're skeptics. And you know what, in some ways we think of people not changing their mind as a bad thing, but in some ways being skeptical can be a positive thing. It can be linked, in fact there are some people who link it to survival traits that we have, and that it has some positive effects there. But that's one of the reasons when we talk about politics and why people don't change their mind, and it is rare and it can happen, but that whole process of our political socialization, how we take in information, that reinforcement that goes on, and a lot of counter information that goes against the facts still.
Yeah, I suppose if you look at it from an evolutionary standpoint, it's kind of like food. Like we tend to enjoy the foods with which we are familiar because we know that those foods aren't poisonous because they haven't killed us yet. I suppose we're psychologically we like the ideas and the concepts and the facts that have gotten us this far because they haven't gotten us killed yet, and we are therefore resistant to new information. Mm-hmm. Roxanne?
Audrey is absolutely right. I mean, we're pre-programmed to seek consistency and harmony between our attitudes and our behaviors. And what's really interesting is some of us are more programmed to have cognitive dissonance than others. People who are more cognitively flexible, who don't see things as black and white, they're more likely to incorporate counter information without feeling highly anxious about it. And people who expect that things have to be a certain way, who are rigid in their thinking, they will experience more dissonance or more psychological stress when alternative ideas come up. So what's really interesting is for those people, they're more likely to rationalize, minimize, deny what they see and hear. And even more interesting than that, they're likely to avoid new information that's going to challenge their previously held belief because the dissonance is really problematic for them. So think about those people who absolutely don't want to listen to certain radio stations or watch particular news channels because they only want information that is going to be consistent with how they see the world.
And, listen, you know, Audrey, I was going to follow up on that great point because there have been a number of studies that have come out, and that is a real clear distinction. Some of the people in politics that are really sort of, you know, moving the agenda are often those people who only take in one certain aspect or watch one certain part of news, and it's a relatively small group. But they can be influential. Most people, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, tend to actually get information from multiple places and other people, but there's a core group that doesn't. And one other point on it to follow up on what Roxanne said, there's even some studies now that are coming out in political science that are looking at our genes. And, you know, she raised a really good point that we have, that there are tendencies for people who are more likely to experience cognitive dissonance or not. And it may be related to our sort of genetic makeup and our, in politics, we talk about people who end up being very traditionalist or people who end up being change-oriented and accepting of change. And we see sort of, you know, partisanship divide that way. We see political discourse dividing that way. We see sort of this election in a way dividing that way. And it's interesting to see that, you know, it may not be the campaign changing your mind rather than, you know, activating the beliefs that you already have and your tendencies that you already have.
My guests are Kennesaw State University psychology professor Roxanne Donovan, also University of Georgia political scientist Audrey Haynes. We're talking about the tendency among humans to resist information that challenges our worldview, and we'd love to hear what you think. Tell us about a time when you changed your mind or your opinion in response to facts that you were presented with. Tweet us at OST Talk. Join our conversation at facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio. Michelle W. tweets, it's impossible to think you can forget about something or someone when you are thinking about how to not think about it. And Brian McGovern tweets, my politics changed shortly after moving to the South. My views on religion a year or two after that. Interesting. So with the remaining couple of minutes that we have left here, guys, I want to kind of talk about solutions. Is it possible to be made aware of a psychological tendency that you have and in the act of being made aware of it, be able to therefore consciously mitigate it?
Yes. The good news is the answer is yes. You need to be self-aware, and that is a process that you can undertake if you're not already. Some questions you can ask yourself to figure out whether cognitive dissonance is at work for you is, do you tend not to change your mind once you make a decision? Or are you more likely to dig into an idea or decision once someone has challenged it? And if the answer is resounding yes to both those questions, you can think, okay, well, how can I be more self-reflective? How can I be more mindful and attention-focused about how I might be responding to something? And how can I open myself to contrary information? and maybe try just one thing, the foot in the door technique, just one thing that is counter to how I believe, examine what that felt like, and then maybe do more things to challenge myself to act in ways that are inconsistent. Also, getting someone to argue the opposite of what they believe can be a really interesting way to get them to think differently about something that may be causing them cognitive dissonance.
Audrey, 30 seconds. What can we in the media do to help people be more receptive to information that challenges their beliefs?
Well, that's a tough one. I would argue that it's not going to be the media that changes them, their minds, that when they're at home with someone that they really care about, they've had a full stomach full of turkey, maybe a glass of wine, and that person talks to them in a very non-confrontational, non-emotional, you know, this is why you need to think about this, attach it to someone that they care about, admit their own biases, and work on it collaboratively. I mean, it's hard for the media. The media does what it's supposed to do. There's plenty of centrist sources. They present both sides of the information, the critical information. I think it's more appropriate to say what Roxanne has done. We, the people, need to be more careful and thoughtful about our own biases. And not worry so much about the media, but ourselves and what we're taking in and how we're making decisions.
Okay, no comment. Audrey Haynes teaches political science at UGA. Roxanne Donovan teaches psychology at Kennesaw State. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
And that's it for our show today. But as always, we do want to hear from you. What does it take to change your mind? We would love to hear about a time when you had a strong opinion that ended up changing at the end. What was it that pushed you over the edge? Call us at 404-500-9457. That's 404-500-9457. We're on Twitter at OST Talk or post to facebook.com/OnSecondThoughtRadio. For today, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Celeste Headley. Have yourself a good one.